colleagues that while you may have good legal and tactical reasons at this stage to exempt commercial, there is an appetite on this body to revisit that question down the road, or at least to engage other stakeholders in how we might address that issue in the short term. Now, there are both ecological and safety reasons, and in a sense, I think we've shortchanged the ecological reasons while focusing on the safety issues here today. The reduction in the speed would help control bank erosion, would lower the amount of disruptive noise, and help restore the connectivity between Oaks Bottom and Ross Island. It would also provide a safer area for kayaks and canoes and dragon boats, ensuring calmer waters and reducing user conflicts. Now, the resolution also calls for a no motorized zone for the Ross Island Lagoon located in the center of the island, and that requires that all motors except for small electric motors be turned off while inside this ecologically sensitive area. Again, it does not prohibit recreationists, including people who want to fish, from accessing the lagoon. And specifically, people who fish would still be permitted to enter the lagoon just as kayakers or people in canoes would. These new zones would allow users of all kinds to continue to access the areas that they currently access. It would simply improve the safety and help protect the substantial investment being made to restore the area for fish and wildlife habitat. And finally, establishing these zones not only aligns with the work of the Ross Island Vision Team, as outlined in this document, but it also, and from my point of view, critically aligns with the City of Portland's Parks 2020 vision, adopted by this council in 2001, that includes goals and strategies to preserve, protect, and restore Portland's natural resources. Vote today is a recommendation which will go to the Marine Board. The Marine Board will then have a full public hearing and will weigh the views of all stakeholders on this issue. And so ours is simply one of many voices that would go to the Marine Board. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
I've spent a considerable amount of time in my political life focused on Ross Island. Did quite a bit of research on it when I was in the legislature. Its original composition has been nearly destroyed by commercial activity. In fact, in the 1999 sessions of the legislature and the 2001 sessions of the legislature, I introduced bills prohibiting any further use of the island for commercial gravel excavation. I got to go to a union meeting that the Teamsters invited me to of 400 very angry Ross Island sand and gravel employees whose jobs would have been eliminated as a result of the passage of that bill. But it was something I felt strongly enough about that I agreed to go and defend why I thought that needed to be done. This is very much in keeping with what I believe is the type of care we must give to this very precious portion of our river. Somebody mentioned earlier that the two islands were reconnected by some fill. They weren't reconnected. They were artificially connected. They are actually two distinct islands, which my bill also called to be removed, have that fill removed and allow free flow through Ross Island. Again, I hope to see that happen someday. But in the meantime, I think the minimum that we can do is try to do what little is possible to maintain what's there and possibly even restore what's there, and certainly to allow people to go through there in non-motorized boats that are paddling unmolested by wakes. I am a boater. I bought a year ago a sailboat for $1,400 that my wife tells me I paid $1,300 too much for, and so it's challenged, but it's a place that I would like to go and be able to know that I could take this little sailboat there and not get swamped by a powerboat as I'm enjoying that part of the river. So I think that the restriction makes a lot of sense, and I heartily support it. Aye.
Adams.
Great testimony on all sides of the issue. Aye. Council item 260 is approved. Carla, would you please read Could you please read the title for Council Items 264 and 265? Go ahead.
264, authorized contract with BP, 264 and 265. 264, authorized an intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Development Commission for funding of a portion of the construction phase for the East Burnside and Cooch Couplet Project, and 265, authorize a contract and provide payment for construction of the East Burnside Cooch Couplet Project.
So these items, both 264 and 265, authorize an IGA with PDC to provide for $4.9 million for construction funding. The IGA was passed by the Portland Development Commission on March 11th. It's an authorization of city to bid and award the contract that shows up as one of the items on the local stimulus package. The total project cost is $17.8 million, and the funds are derived from a combination of federal earmark, thank you, Congressman Earl Blumenauer, system development charges, tax increment financing, regional transportation improvement project money, and IOF funds. It has a high level of confidence in cost estimates. We estimate that it will create 140 construction jobs. Construction is anticipated to start in July of 2009 and be completed in 2010. The adjacent businesses, property owners, neighborhood, and business associations support the project. It provides enhanced vehicle and transit access and traffic flow through the realignment of Burnside and Cooch Streets onto a one-way couplet system between the Burnside Bridgehead Project and Northeast 14th Avenue, including improvements at 12th, Sandy, Burnside, and Cooch intersections. It builds transportation improvements on East Burnside and Northeast Cooch Streets that will provide additional traffic access to the Bridgehead property. We know we have additional work to do on the left turn from Cooch on back onto Burnside, and we're working with the potential developer of that. It significantly improves pedestrian safety. It has been a high agenda item for the Urban Renewal Advisory Committee members for years. So I'm pleased today to have these items and be able to move them forward. We have folks here if there are questions that people need to ask. Anyone here wishes to testify on this matter? Everyone who cares about jobs and a better East Portland should be jumping up and dancing right now. But Carla, please call the roll.
264, Fritz.
And that's why it's really good that this is being aired. This is a $17.8 million project and something that Commissioner Adams and now Mayor Adams has focused on as a priority for the Central East Side Industrial District. And it's getting nearly $5 million of Portland Development Commission tax increment financing. I want to recognize both the Central East Side Urban Renewal Area, the Burnside Bridgehead Citizen Advisory Committee, and the Kearns Neighborhood Association for working on this, and also to thank Mayor Adams for continuing to work on finding financing for other projects in that district which aren't funded yet, but including the Hooper Detox Center, and I appreciate that. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard?
This is excellent work, Mayor Adams. You should be feeling really good about working to this successful end, and I'm very pleased to support this. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Thanks to the great team at PDC and the Bureau of Transportation. Aye. Please, anyone here to testify on item 265? Council discussion on 265. Please call the roll on item 265.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Could you please read the title for item 271?
Extend contract with S. Brooks and Associates to provide temporary services, aquatic staff, for the Bureau of Parks and Recreation for the period March 23 through May 31, 2009.
Thank you, Mayor. As my colleagues know, this matter was originally before Council as an item through Office of Management and Finance. During our Council discussion, we all had concerns, different kinds of concerns about this, and in particular, there was a desire to learn more about who's covered and who isn't and how it fits in with the overall policies and practices of the Parks Bureau. I'm new enough in this job that I did not have the answers to those questions, and I had the same concerns that were raised by my colleagues. So here's what I'd like to propose. This contract is scheduled to expire on March 22nd. We've heard the concerns raised by council, and we've heard the concerns raised by our labor partners. I have pulled this item back to my office for further review and study so I can report back to you. The reason this matter is before us today, though, is that in order for me to have adequate time to give you the report that you've requested, I'm proposing that we simply extend the contract for 2 months so that we can maintain the status quo. That will give me a chance to complete my analysis, thoroughly address all the questions and concerns that have been raised, and then report back to you in a timely fashion.
Seems like a reasonable approach. Anyone here that wishes to testify on Council Item 271? Any additional council discussion? Carla, would you please call the roll?
I truly appreciate this approach. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Aye. 271 is approved. Could you please read the title for Council Item 272?
Authorize $268,000 for grant agreement for immigrant and refugee community organization, Latino Network, Native American Youth and Family Center, and Urban League of Portland for the Diversity and Civic Leadership Organizing Project from November 21, 2008 through June 30, 2010.
Commissioner Fritz.
I had originally put this on consent and then I pulled it because I wanted to celebrate the fact that the previous council did authorize this money for our, what we call our diverse civic leadership partners. And this is us, the people who are getting these funds, the community organizations who are getting these funds are part of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And it's really splendid that we are no longer the organizations that people might have thought of neighborhood associations many years ago, but now we truly include all of our community partners.
Is anyone here wishes to testify on this item? Any additional council discussion? Could you please call the roll for Council Item 272?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your leadership on this and other issues. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Aye. 272 is approved. With the council's permission, I'd like to move to the emergency 285. Could you please call the title for Council Item 285?
Authorized application to U.S. Department of Homeland Security for a grant in the amount of $1 million for construction of or renovation of state, local, or tribal government principal emergency operations center.
By council charter, council has to authorize any application for a grant. And that's what this item does. Any council discussion? Anyone here wishes to testify on item 285? Carla, would you please call the roll for 285?
Fritz?
My understanding is that $1 million is the maximum this grant can be applied for. Thank you to Carmen Merlo and others for making sure it gets in. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 285 is approved. Could you please read the title for 286?
Authorized limited tax revenue refunding bonds.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
I'm Eric Johansson, the debt manager in the Office of Management and Finance. This particular ordinance authorizes the refinancing of our 1999 limited tax revenue bonds that were originally issued to fund a portion of the original streetcar project. Interest rates are lower now than they were at the time that we sold those bonds in 1999, so we have the opportunity to refinance those bonds at this point to save about $90,000 a year in debt service costs. The debt service on these bonds are the responsibility of the parking fund, so the beneficiary will be the parking system of the city. We expect to sell these bonds through competitive bidding in probably late April, it looks like, and at that point we'll know for sure what the savings look like. Happy to take any questions.
Questions from council? Is there anyone here that wishes to testify on item 285? There's nobody here that wishes to testify on item
286.
Sorry, 286. Thank you. Carla, can you please call the roll for Council Item 286?
Fritz?
It's really great that you're watching out for ways to save us money. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 286 is approved. Could you please read the title for Council Item 289?
Authorized assessment of $79,925 for a fire watch at 418 Southwest Washington Street.
Commissioner Leonard.
So could I have our designated folks approach? Other than you, Ted, you'll get it your chance. Not you. Thank you, Mayor Adams and Council. Politics is the art of compromise. I learned that a long time ago when I decided to start a second career for myself. But public safety, protection of the public, protection of police officers and firefighters, I'm uncompromising about. I revert back to my prior profession when those discussions are being had. This is an issue relating to the protection of not just the public, but Portland firefighters and police officers from injury and or death. This, and there's people smiling at that now. I've unfortunately had to, as part of my prior career, as has each of the people sitting before you, remove people who have died in fires. And it is something that steals you for any future encounter you have to deal with circumstances where people can be at danger of injury or death to be uncompromising about. And the building that we're going to be discussing here and the incidents that have led up to the action we're going to take today are surrounding a building that, in my view, is one of the most hazardous in Portland to the safety of the public and firefighters. So I will ask the gentleman before us to talk about the specifics of what has led to us being here today. Please introduce yourselves.
Okay. I'm George Burke. I'm a lieutenant with Portland Police Bureau at Central Precinct. And just to kind of give a little bit of a historical perspective, looking at some statistical data, we responded to the Greek Cuisina, which is the address in question here, from 2003 to 2008, 458 calls for service. And looking at the number of calls for service in 2000...
Between what 2 years?
I'm sorry, 5 years. 2003 to 2008.
How many calls?
458 calls for service. In 2007...
Those are just police calls.
Correct. Thank you. In 2007, we responded to 117 calls for service to the same location in 1 year time period. In May of 2008, we started looking at, or I guess we worked with a code enforcement team between, which was a multidisciplinary approach to take a look at how we can resolve issues associated with this location, to where we partnered with BDS as well as Portland Fire Bureau to look at not only from a law enforcement perspective, but as a complete safety issue to the community as well as to the responding persons to these calls for service. There were 54 calls for service in the year 2008. The majority of those calls for service all took place prior to any implementation of a new strategy, which took place on May 14th of 2008. I think that speaks volumes as to what has happened with the cooperation between involving BDS as well as Portland Fire Bureau and law enforcement to look at this at a multidisciplinary approach. I think that leads directly into where we're heading with my partners here at the table.
Thank you.
I'm John Knorr, Fire Marshal. We started in May of 2008, or that's when I became aware. Actually, I was appointed Fire Marshal in June, but I was made aware of what was going on prior to that. A fire watch was placed at that location due to the safety violations in the building and the inability of the building owner to properly follow the fire watch that he was allowed to perform initially. Because we're very specific with some very simple rules for following the fire watch, and those rules weren't followed, we have the authority in the Fire Bureau to place a fire watch in a structure. And so we placed a third-party fire watch into the structure with the understanding of the building owner that he was responsible for the bill for that fire watch.
And when was that originally?
I have to get that date specifically, but I believe May 29th.
So I want to point out that that was under the then commissioner in charge, Tom Potter.
And what is a fire watch?
A fire watch is specifically you have someone awake and alert patrolling the building at intervals that we deem necessary based on the danger in the building. In this particular building, we want it patrolled every 30 minutes. The fire watch person must have a form of communication to contact 911. They log all the areas that they patrolled or keep a log of the building that they patrolled. They make direct contact of any sign of fire or other emergency issue. So we initially allowed the building owner to do that fire watch, but the person who has the designated fire watch by the building owner was found asleep on a couch, not with a phone. And when asked if he had a phone, what he would do, he said he would call the building owner, which was contrary to our direct orders that you call 911 when you have an emergency. So the third-party fire watch was in place for a period of time. There were some actions taken by the building owner to bring a few safety issues partially up to speed, one of them being a full alarm and sprinkler system for the building. And at that time I don't have the specific date in front of me, I believe it was early October, probably about October 17th or so to be more clear. We allowed him to take over fire watch duties again with some specific directions as the building cannot be occupied above the third floor and the basement could not be occupied by more than three people at one time, specifically for the storage and retrieval of materials. The basement was currently being used in a non-permitted way against fire code. Approximately 2 weeks later, we found evidence that people were utilizing the basement for food preparation and that that people were spending more time than just going down storing material or retrieving material from the coolers. So at that point, it was in violation of the fire watch again, and I ordered the third-party fire watch put back on.
What kind of food preparation?
There was evidence of that it looked like something was going on, wrapping materials on a table that looked like bread items were being prepared. There was evidence that food had been washed in a sink, in a non-permitted sink that was in the basement, a dishwashing area. Prior to this, I should go back and state that prior to this, there were ovens and stoves down there the building owner did disconnect in June. So we did not have evidence that those were connected back up and running again, but there were other signs of minor food prep.
The problem with the basement is there's only one way in and out. Is that the essential?
There are two ways in and out, but they are quite a ways apart, and they're not easily accessed. They're two very narrow stairways.
So what would it take to break the building up to code?
Specifically the fire code?
Yes.
As for the basement, I can't speak to that. That's more of a building code. I have the authority to enforce the violation of the fire code, but it's really a building issue that the basement is not authorized for that.
Let me take a stab at that. We had a meeting in my office with the fire marshal present, fire chief present, the police bureau present, the Bureau of Development Services present, Mr. Pappas present, an architect, his banker, and we specifically went through the issues that he was in violation of, some of which affects the life and safety regulations that the Fire Bureau has and the Bureau of Development Services. We indicated a willingness, and that was back in July, or do you have that on a timeline when we had that meeting? It was last summer. And then we indicated our willingness to develop a work plan that as long as he showed a willingness by demonstrating his work actually being accomplished, we would work with them. And I think part of the reason we're here today is none of that was followed up on.
I'm just wondering structurally in the building, what would it take so that these fire watches would not need to happen?
It isn't a matter of structures in the building at this point. It's a matter of trusting the building owner to do what he has been requested to do by the Fire Bureau to have his own fire watch. He has to have a fire watch until there are adequate alarm systems in place, adequate sprinkler systems in place. He's disconnected sprinkler systems, cut holes through floors to create an atrium. He's had a number of significant violations occur in the building, none of which would not allow him to have his own fire watch if he demonstrated that he would follow through with the things he has committed to with the fire bureau.
So the fire marshal had indicated that there was a sprinkler system installed?
There is a one of the requirements to get the original fire watch off, the original third-party fire watch, was that that the sprinkler system be tested by an authorized sprinkler company, that everything was brought back up to speed on that. There were still some questions about whether or not the atrium area was adequately covered. So I had one of our sprinkler senior inspectors who deals with sprinkler systems go out and look at it. He felt that it minimally could pass. But part of the issue that the commissioner is alluding to is that building used to be a U-shaped building that had a light well for light to get to the inner parts of the building was originally built. The owner has at some point capped that off and then removed the exterior walls, what were formerly exterior walls, and created a large atrium in there that has
with
no
permits?
Blockage that will prevent heat and smoke products of combustion from rising from lower levels. And if there was anybody on the upper floors, they'd be caught in that.
And what's the progress been made in getting the whole structure up to have its permits?
That's an issue that the owner is dealing with BDS with. So it's the building. To kind of specify or try to answer your question, the building code official designates what the occupancy is going to be, and then the fire code official, who's myself, can enforce that. And there are fire codes related to what the occupancy is. So the building code official can allow the occupancy change in the basement. I can't allow that or designate that occupancy change, but I do enforce the fire rules that relate to that occupancy.
But as to the work plan that we agreed to in my office, it's my understanding that that has not been followed through on.
It is, as far as I know, and this is third party to me, but it's still in, the owner is still working with BDS, attempting to get permits. So I don't know where that's at.
Are we treating this building owner or operator fairly? Did this come to our attention? You know, how did this come to our attention?
We created a group of BDS officials, police officials, fire officials, to deal with some of the more significantly challenged occupancies in the core area. This was one of them that have year after year after year avoided either complying with police concerns or fire concerns or building code concerns. This was a building that was has been targeted by that group because of the accumulation of the various violations, whether they're police, fire, or building code. And they did a thorough inspection, sat down, as I said, including myself, with the building owner to try to come up with a reasonable work plan to allow him to correct the items that he'd done without permit, to allow him to make the improvements to the structure as required by the Bureau of Development Services and the Fire Bureau. And the problem that we've had is we are walking this fine line between how do I explain to the public if something happens and we lose a number of people that we allowed this building to stay open in the condition it is, balanced against trying to work with Mr. Pappas to allow him to continue his business, but showing some good faith that he will do the things that the Fire Bureau and the Police Bureau and the Bureau of Buildings has identified that need to be done. So in many ways, I think that if something terrible happened, I would be hard-pressed to explain why we have been as lenient as we have up until now, because for a variety of reasons, there is more than enough justification for the fire marshal at this point to close the building down.
Commissioner Leonard, may I jump in for a second?
Yeah.
Because separate and apart from whatever issues Mr. Pappas chooses to make before us, and he has the right as a citizen to come before us, and we'll give him that opportunity. I want to make sure I understand procedurally what's before us. The decision to impose a fire watch, correct me if I'm wrong, is entrusted to you, Chief Knorr, and you report in turn to the fire chief. So that's a decision that by law, you have the authority to make that decision. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I would say in the 7 months I've been on this job, I don't remember a single time when we as a body were asked to second-guess that judgment. So that leads to my second question, because, again, we're a deliberative body, and I want to be sure we understand what our scope of authority is. If you were to come to my commercial establishment and put on a fire watch that I disagreed with, what is my recourse as a citizen, as a business owner?
You could take it to the Fire Board of Appeals.
Okay. And that is a prescribed rule in our procedures that gives someone a chance to... Did Mr. Pappas take this to the Board of Appeals?
He did. On October 1st, well, I have to go back. We received...
Sorry, I don't want to make more work for you. He did take it to the Board of Appeals?
He appealed the Fire Watch agreement. We received in our office 7-15-08 his appeal form. We convened what we call the big board, or the Fire Board of Appeals. It does not meet very often. It is a three-person citizen panel who heard on October 14th, and I had said the 17th earlier. On October 14th, they heard his appeal.
And did they take action on that appeal?
They did not take action on the fire watch. They suspended some fines that were assessed for some other violations, fire code violations. Because he made statements that he was working toward getting his building up to code, they suspended the fines for 6 months pending. They were going to look at it again in 6 months to see, and that 6 months will be mid-April, but to see if he's made progress toward.
Did they revoke the fire watch?
They did not, but I did pull it off. The board did not revoke the fire watch, but I took the fire watch off based on the fact that his building, he'd finished getting the sprinkler system tested and checked. So shortly after that October 14th date, I pulled the fire watch off.
So you did. At some point, it was reimposed.
On October 31st.
On October 31st, when you determined that the conditions that had been laid out had not been met by the property owner.
Right.
And has that action been taken back to the Board of Appeals?
No.
Okay. So is there just, I want to just, I mean, I'm not, this is, I'm not, I want to make sure that we're not establishing a precedent here. It comes back to haunt us. Is the issue of the imposition of the fire watch, maybe this is for council to tell us, is that issue before us, or is my understanding is the only issue before us is authorization that's being sought to levy against it, to put a lien on the property, but so if that's the case, it is not our, is it our role here to pass on the merits of the fire watch, or are we simply coming in a ministerial function to determine whether the lien is imposed?
Well, your points are absolutely right on, Commissioner Fish, but I wouldn't want to imply or suggest that any of my colleagues shouldn't appropriately ask questions around the larger subject of why Mr. Pappas is building, what is the condition of it, what caused you to take the actions that you did. We are prepared today to talk about that because I anticipated that those questions would be asked, and they're appropriate, but you are absolutely right. The question before us is whether or not to lien the property for the expense the Fire Bureau has gone to put on a fire watch to assure itself that the workers at the Greek Cuisine, that the public at the Greek Cuisine, and certainly firefighters and any other public safety personnel are protected from what would occur if a fire did break out.
And I appreciate that, Commissioner, and I guess I'll just preview what I hope to mention in my remarks later, which is there's three different kinds of claims that I read in the submission. One is a question of whether there were the propriety of putting a fire watch. I believe that has been delegated to fire professionals who run the Bureau to make that judgment. And I don't think, in absent extraordinary circumstances, the council should second guess that. I don't think we're in a position to. We don't even have a hearing process that I can think of to do that. The second is that Mr. Pappas has made general claims of discrimination. Again, there is recourse through administrative law and the courts if you believe you've been discriminated against. Anyone would have the right to pursue that. And third, my understanding is he has raised some issue of misconduct on the basis of some sworn officer. Again, we have procedures that are established for people to bring those complaints because we're not an adjudicative body. We don't make those judgments. We review records that come to us when appropriate. So I just want to preview that I want to be clear that whatever issue we're addressing here is a proper issue for us to consider and that we're not somehow jumping the gun on other kinds of things.
No, as I said, I think it's entirely proper for the questions to be asked that are, I appreciate you focusing on, because of your training as an attorney, what the true issue is before us. You're right. But understanding that this is a legislative body and Mr. Pappas has made some of the claims he has, I don't want to feed into that by trying to restrict anybody's right to say what they want to here. But as these gentlemen before you are trained, as so am I, a lot of chafe that's thrown up in the air doesn't detract me from what it is that I am intending to do. And I consider a lot of what's been said and what you will hear to be chafe that is intended to distract the focus of this body from what the real issue is. And the real issue is the safety of the public, the workers inside, the firefighters, and any other public safety personnel who have to go into that building.
And having been through these kinds of issues before, I want to make sure that and anticipating that there'll be charges of anti-business or what have you, selective focus, I just want to make sure that, knowing that we're speaking to a wider community, that to do a little due diligence on that. So how many years or how long or have you been in a problem-solving mode on this before coming to this, request the council for this measure? This is the first time that I know of in a couple of decades rattling around this building that this kind of a lien has been imposed. So I assume this is a pretty extreme example of what you all perceive to be non-compliance. And so how long have you been in sort of problem-solving mode? And I don't know who to address it to because we've had a number of
fire bureaus. Yeah. Most appropriate. Police has also had a long history.
And what I was going to say, Mayor Adams, is that Sergeant Ingen as well as Officer Jeff Myers are both here, and they have the specific details that probably address some of the concerns that you may have right up front. But to go back, and I don't want to detract from your question you just asked, but you had asked a question about fairness and equity. And one of the things that had happened is after this incident on May 14th, where 50 fire violation categories were identified, there was a consultant that was brought in, paid for by the city. John Campbell came in at our cost and met with the owners, the Greek Cuisine, to go through what they could do to help alleviate some of the problems. So the problem solving has been ongoing. You know, we identify the problems. I look back at 2003. So we're back at 2003 as to what I have records for in front of me. And I would suggest that we could probably go before 2003, but that's what I have. And we've done, I think the enforcement that was done here was simply a reaction to trying to gain compliance. This is not an effort to, certainly not an effort to shut down somebody's business. This is trying to bring a business into compliance so that the safety of the people, not only the people who go there, who choose to go there, but those people who have to respond there for calls for service are provided their safe access.
And trust me, Mr. Pappas, you'll have plenty of time to respond to this, I guarantee you. But I want to make sure we get both sides of the story out here. So I see you back there ready to explode. I promise we'll let you explode in front of the microphone. Other questions?
Another question for the fire marshal. I thought you heard you say that the appeals board suspended the fines.
They held them in abeyance for 6 months, and at 6 months they're going to go back and see if progress had been made toward fixing the violations.
So this is this $79,000 is not a fine.
That is not a fine. That is the bill for the third party fire watch.
And did the appeals board consider taking that off or taking any action on that $79,000?
When they met in October, that wasn't the amount. There continues to be a third-party fire watch on that building.
But was there any consideration, was there any discussion at the appeals board about whether or not that cost should be levied on the property owner?
I don't recall, but I don't believe that that's not something that they would rule on, whether or not that cost should be levied on the fire on the owner. Fire watch is very specific in that the building owner is responsible for the fire watch. And to answer the mayor's question, the reason you haven't seen anything like this before is because most building owners take responsibility for the fire watch. We order fire watches on a regular basis. We don't get into this situation very often.
Yeah, to be clear, these are out-of-pocket expenses. The fire bureau has actually paid these costs. These are not fines or debatable or, you know, who should pay it. They are required under Title 31 to have fire watches when the fire bureau designates as such. The fire marshal has a lot of latitude in what form that fire watch takes. Most often, if I'm not mistaken, you have a level of confidence in the property owner that they can perform the fire watch themselves, and as I understand it, you allow that to happen.
Right.
In certain limited occasions where either there's not a property owner present or you have no faith that the property owner is going to do what they've asked to do, they actually hire a licensed, bonded security company that is trained and follows directions to come and perform the fire watch. And they're doing just what is suggested. They are watching the building awake with the radio, with the ability to call 911 as soon as something happens. The fire marshal wants them there to prevent that from happening. In this instance, Mr. Pappas, as I understand, a couple of times has been given the option by the fire marshal after training to have his employees perform the fire watch. Each time the fire marshal went back to follow up on that, he concluded that the building owner was not following through with his instructions, and based on what the fire bureau is charged with, he had the obligation, and not just the responsibility, but the obligation to hire a licensed, bonded security company come to perform those fire watches. And what you have before you is the bill for that service that Mr. Pappas has refused to pay.
And just one final question on that: is the fire watch 24/7 or just when the building's occupied or open?
I don't have that information in front of me. It was 24 hours a day in the initial part. I don't have the agreement for what we've done since October 31st. Inspector Alderman would be able to answer that question.
Thank you.
And we have the Bureau of Development Services here to ask questions about the building and the conditions and all that. If you want to get into that, I would remind you of Commissioner Fish's observation that that's not really at issue here, but we are prepared to get in as much depth of this as this at this point as the council wants, or you can be briefed later. But really, the issue here is narrow. It is the fire watch, the out-of-pocket expense of the fire bureau, which, as you can imagine, is impacting their budget and their desire to have Mr. Pappas be responsible for the bill.
So in terms of other cases across the city that sort of fall into this category, maybe not the specifics, but in terms of police and fire attention and concern about deficits in safety, how many other cases over the past 5 years would sort of be in the same kind of category?
Mr. Mayor, I'm John Klum, fire chief. I was fire marshal for 3.5 years prior to John Knorr taking over that position. And so during my time there, we take the articles within Title 31 very seriously, because there's a clause in there that gives the fire marshal the authority to declare imminent hazard. And in my tenure in that, I've only had to evoke that two times where I felt that there was a significant risk to life. I won't go into detail what those two locations were, but at those particular times, we offered with the building or business owners to perform their own fire watch, which in most cases they're relatively successful, but we had to, on one particular instance, revoke their ability to provide their own fire watch and provide it 24/7. This is the first time that we've had a business owner or refuse to pay for it. So this is a relatively new area for us to come before. I think the last lien that was established for non-compliant payment was back in the 80s. So I guess the point being is that we don't take this in a light tone on things. It's usually when it gets up to the fire marshal's level on this. There's a key decision on declaring whether there is truly an imminent life safety hazard. Generally speaking, we have routine fire watches on a regular basis for multifamily units that have a problem after hours with their alarm systems, to where we usually get a responsible party, and it's seamless to where they can do that for a temporary basis for 24 to 48 hours. Sprinkler systems after significant weather events that break pipes and so forth. But this particular one, there was enough criticality into it, and the complexity of having a business on the first two floors with the remaining floors having a different occupancy level, it created a challenging situation to where we didn't want to adversely affect Mr. Pappas's ability to make a living. In instances, the two instances that I spoke to before when I was fire marshal, we actually shut the place down. It was that significant, but we didn't want to have that economic adverse impact to Mr. Pappas in this case. So that's why we were trying to work with him to try to, with the fire watches, so he can maintain his viability of his business.
I will tell you the level of violations they have identified. I have told them that the point at which they feel they need to shut the business down, they had my support, that they could have done that easily before this and have stretched, I think, beyond what some may even think reasonable to try to work with the building owner to keep the business open.
Any other discussion with this panel? Thank you. Mr. Pappas? Did you want to bring anyone else up with you?
Or
you?
Yes. Chuck? Johnny?
So we've heard some background on what leads us to this council discussion today. Feel free to address any of that you feel the need. And then, obviously, we would appreciate you speaking to the point of why we should not levy a lien against your property.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I heard the testimony of the three gentlemen and everybody else. And also, Mr. Fish, to answer your question, it was very well placed. What is the reasoning really for this fire watch? Was it the reasoning really to comply with existing violations of building codes and fire codes? Or was it actually, okay, for punitive reasons? And I hope you have the package in front of you or the written testimony of Mr. Winster as well as mine on that issue. Also, you also heard testimony from a policeman here. The only thing that I want you to put together is this. What do the police records and violations have to do with fire codes and building codes? Okay? That's the question to be asked. Now, because if the safety of the public in case of a fire is based on the police, okay? I'm right now, as a matter of fact, I did have an administrative hearing with the OLCC, and I'm dealing with that issue. And I wish I could have the transcripts of the testimonies of 35 policemen as well as one of the OLCC inspectors to verify that they lie in that testimony. So I'm dealing with all those allegations of police reports. What I'd like to deal today, it is what the main issue is here. Again, was it warranted under the conditions of Mr. Leonard's hit squad? And I will repeat, I'm sorry, Mr. Fish, but the truth is the truth. I did not call these three gentlemen which comprise the hit squad. Mr. Leonard defined that as a hit squad, and I got the article to prove it. I'm not a liar, and I'm a straight shooter. And if I offend you, Mr. Fish, I'm sorry, but this is the truth. But I wanted to point you for a second, attachment B, please. With their own, it was an article written in the Oregonian, which, because nobody wants to have body bags, as Mr. Lerner mentioned on his meeting, okay, out of anybody's building, and I agree with him. But there's plenty. The Oregonian reported last spring that a third of the city's 15 residential high-rises built without sprinklers. He had not even been inspected in 5 years. My building, and I repeat, my building has been fully sprinkled and comply with all the requirements by the fire code, okay? Also, it goes down to say that 1,200 higher-risk occupancy buildings due to inspection, those buildings include residential high-rises with no sprinklers. So you don't have to be a rocket science to understand, okay? When you have buildings, residentials we're talking about, with no sprinkler systems, and you have a building like mine, and by the way, I got a gentleman here to verify how well my sprinkler system works. As a matter of fact, on August 17th, on your, by the way, on the written testimony was August 14th, but it was August 17th, my fire alarm went off, okay? And we had a fire watch. And Mr. Mayor, you asked earlier what does the fire watch does. This is exactly what he does. He's got a flashlight, he's got a pen and a pad, and every 30 minutes he goes up and down the building looking for fires. On that particular incident, which is a fact, okay, the fire alarm went off, okay, the fire trucks arrived at the scene, and the fire watchman didn't even know what was going on. As a matter of fact, I'd be more than happy to challenge Mr. Leonard, you know, to this any time. So the issue again today, so somehow I've been hearing about all these police reports and all these fire codes. Also, I want to bring your attention attachment B. Mr. Lerner has declared my building as the worst of worst. And I quote in this article, Lerner said, police officers' frustration with repeat violations got him thinking about how the city should crack down. May I ask you, what do these police violations have to do with fire and building violations? Are these what we're talking about? All of a sudden, we have police violations acting as experts on fire and building violations. And further down, in this article, Myers and the team and the team's fire and building inspectors decide what business to look at based on anecdotes from the colleagues working in the streets. Now, I'm wondering what kind of anecdotes is that? Is this the actual facts of a building being in danger of the public that we make a hit squad to go after a business been for 35 years? Then Myers pulls the inspection histories and number of police calls. Now, since when the police has become an expert on inspections of fire violations, okay? But I heard earlier from Mr. Lerner said about trusting the owner, and he hit it right on. The whole concept behind this whole issue, it is, I have never been trusted. But have I really been trusted by the fire department and the building department that my architect, my structural engineers, my fire engineers, they have working digitally to solve the violations? Did violations occur in the building? Yes, they have. Out of the 50 violations, how many actually violations? I can only tell you this. We had 15 appeals, okay, of all those violations, and we won every single one of them. I am cooperating, and so is my architects and my whole team, to solve these issues. And I have no problem with the fire department and with the building department. The problem that I have, Mr. Fish, who I try to address to you, it is with a special squad, they have one mission, to put me out of business. And I repeat, to put me out of business. Because by shutting down my whole building except two floors, I'd like to take you a tour to actually see. I'm washing dishes by hand and pots. They never thought that I would survive up to this day, okay? I do preparation in another restaurant which costs me $3,000 a month. Have I complied with all those restrictions they have been imposed on me? Oh, yes, you bet your ass I have. And I will tell you this. Not only I have complied, but if violations keep on occurring, why don't I get cited and I go to a hearing to fight it? Because already they cited me in two different instances, and I went to the hearing, as Mr. Norris said, and they suspended those hearings. Now, while those hearings took place, the mentioning about fire watch, it was never brought up. It was strictly whether or not those fines should be imposed on my building, okay? And they suspended it. Mr. Alderman and I, we have a great relationship. But you know what? If you call Mr. Alderman over here and everybody else, he's not going to say anything against the orders of the commissioner. After all, they're under his orders. I know where his heart is. He knows what's going on. As a matter of fact, I will tell you this. He spoke the truth. On first week of June, and I mark it down, we were together on the third floor, and this was his statement, because he spoke the truth. He says, Ted, if it wasn't for the problems of your nightclub on the third floor, which created all those police reports, we would not be here. This is exactly what Mr. Alderman said, okay? So the connection of police reports and what and the attack, as a matter of fact, March 26 of 2008, okay, I got charged by the OCC of all these violations, police reports. May of 12th, I get attacked by the special squad. 4 days prior to the raid, an insider that he worked for one of Mr. Leonard's departments, he informed me. He says, Ted, Leonard has this special task force that they're going to come down and shut you down, okay? I will disclose the name of that individual if I ever been subpoenaed. And I hope, God, that I will. But those are the facts, okay? So therefore, let's go back to the question again one more time, okay? Are we here to look how unsafe my building was? And did all this unsafety proof that the squad here is providing you with, was that warranted to shut my building down? That is the question. And if I don't get the right and the judgment in this panel right here, I will tell you what I will do. Mr. Lerner, we make sure, he's calling my building the worst of the worst. We make sure it's the worst of the worst, he said. The bar has to be so high that even the attorney representing the other side does not want to go to court. Mr. Lerner, I take it, this statement, as an invitation. And guess what? Okay? I would put my money, not the city's money, my money and your money on the table to go to court, because I know which side the court will decide. Right. This is how far I will go. Okay?
All right, can we get back to the facts of the matter in front of us? We let you vent a little bit. Now, you say here that there is an agreement drafted by your architects to satisfy the demands of the fire department.
Yes.
Your March 18th letter. Is that... So tell me more about that. What did you do? And did the city sign off on it?
Yes, sir. We signed an agreement with the Fire Bureau to comply with certain restrictions, okay? Now, we, in our view, we have complied fully under that agreement. And if we do not comply, what I'm asking the Fire Department, the Building Bureau, give me a citation. They have not cited me, okay? That's what I'm saying. Now, did my architect, with all the faith, by the way, my architect could not be here today because he had an inspection in another county, okay? Otherwise, he would be here. That's why I submitted to you the written statement, okay? He's a highly integrity, this man.
I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry, just to try to get to some factoids here, and I'll let you finish your question. But did you submit whatever the plan was, and did the Fire Bureau sign off on it?
Fire Bureau?
It says here on the second page of your letter, was there an agreement drafted by my architects to satisfy the demands of the fire department? Yes. Did they sign off on it? Did they approve
it?
Yes,
they did.
Yes, sir.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yes, they have.
With the exception of continuing the fire watch. Obviously, they're requiring you to continue the fire watch or we wouldn't be here.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Now, by the way, if I may correct, the time the agreement was signed, it was for us, for the owners, to provide the fire watch, okay? And we did comply. As a matter of fact, Mr. Alderman, he numerous times, he congratulates what a wonderful job we do.
Okay.
So somehow, along those lines, around September, the end of September, October, Mr. Alderman would call occasionally to verify whether we follow through with the agreement. Somehow, that particular night, could not get a hold of whoever was in charge of it, and he admitted he was calling the wrong number. So Jeff Myers shows up. And I will tell you what happened. I do have my other two employees to testify what happened. It was all fabrications and lies. And it was all staged so they can push me out from doing my own fire watch so they can bring the other fire watch.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand your point of view. You don't, you believe that you have a fully functioning fire watch on the premises now, and therefore the city should not have one, and therefore the city should not lien your building to pay for the fire watch that we put on.
That is correct, sir. Okay. That is correct.
Is there anything, and that's, I think, pretty close to the crux of the situation, but did you have more questions?
Well, I have a question in the record that you sent us.
Yes.
Thank you for the information. Attachment F1 of 2, there's a letter from the fire, Portland Fire and Rescue, dated September 11th, 2008, that says you are authorized to provide the fire watch.